Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Thank you, everybody, for taking time out of your busy day to listen to Global from Asia episode number 51. Had a jam-packed day in Hong Kong. Saw the new Ferris wheel they installed a while ago right on Hong Kong Island. Took a quick photo. I'll add that to the show notes if you want to check it out. A little bit of a shadow, but it's the best I could do under the quick rushing between meetings. It'll be on globalfromasia.com/episode51 at the bottom. While rushing around Hong Kong, I got this awesome email from a listener, and I just wanted to give it a quick shout out. It's from Danny Guerrero, and it was just an hour ago or so. He says, "Thanks for the podcast. I'm listening to every single podcast of yours, and it's giving me a much better understanding of how businesses run in China. Don't think I would have found a better place to learn about China. I'll opening up my own e-commerce store in China in about 4 months. Thanks again, Danny." Well, thank you, Danny, for listening and giving me that quick email. It really motivates me to keep going, and I love it. All right, now on to today's show. We have John Wintermeyer from Payment Wall Merchant Solutions, based out of Silicon Valley, California, in America. I got introduced to this company from a listener, Jack, based in Taiwan, who suggested it when I was talking about the Stripe services needed in Hong Kong in episode number 26. I'm happy he did, and I connected with John. He got back to me really quickly with just a cold email out to him. And we talk about their services for Hong Kong businesses, and they're really kind of growing internationally and giving lots of different solutions and choices for companies that aren't based in America or other, like, quote-unquote, first world places. I also got some insights on the whole merchant account industry, terms to look for when you're applying to these companies. So, you know, it's not, they didn't pay me. I'm not, you know, this is just to learn. And hopefully if you're interested in their services, you can give them a try. I'm also taking a look at them a little bit more and going through the application process. It's just really hard, you know. Part of this show, one of the things I'm hoping to do is make it a little bit easier for us to understand how to get a good merchant account to do business with the newest technology. So, you know, I think these guys are worth looking at, and John really does share openly about the whole industry. Also, before the show went live, I talked to some other friends in Hong Kong about it, and they gave me some questions, and actually John gave me real-time answers after the show was already recorded, and I'm going to put that on afterwards after John, so that you can listen. And there'll also be tons of show notes with all this stuff. So let's listen in. All right. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to another Global from Asia podcast. And I'm excited to have John Wintermeyer with us from paymentwall.com, a merchant account service. So thanks for being on the show, John.
Thanks, Michael, for having me.
Sure. And this is listener feedback. Named Jack was commenting about your service. So I'm really amazed. It's just amazing, again, the whole cycle here of feedback, and again, you on the show and sharing and us learning about your services. So thanks again. And maybe we can start off with your introducing yourself and Payment Wall.
Yeah, Michael. So I've been at Payment Wall for about 3 years now. I'm in charge of actually our whole sales team. So I'm based in our San Francisco office, and I work with, we have about 15, 20 salespeople located all over the world: San Francisco, Las Vegas, Amsterdam, Berlin, Kiev, Istanbul, Manila, and soon Beijing and Brazil. So yeah, so Payment Wall, what we do is we really help merchants provide these payment services to easily set up an account and then to accept payments all over the world, including China, including South America, Europe, and over 180 countries. So it's really great that actually one of your users gave feedback to you to have Payment Wall on this podcast, because we don't do that much marketing, actually. We have our end users do marketing. That includes merchants and people who are paying on Payment Wall.
Cool. Honestly, this is my first time to kind of interact besides the website, and kind of leads into my question that is coming up. Well, you know, China and Hong Kong are, some people think, is similar, but they have this little bit of differences, and Hong Kong companies seem to struggle receiving money online, and it's kind of one of the main challenges I'm trying to solve on the show, is helping companies based in Hong Kong or operating with a Hong Kong company better receive money online. Maybe how we start is, why do you think there are these problems now?
So yeah, so I think it's a problem with a lot of international companies. So maybe not just Hong Kong, but all over. So That's actually, it's funny with Hong Kong companies. We work with a large number of them. And their first question actually is, can you work with a Hong Kong company? So I'm not sure why they have so many issues reaching out, but I can think of a couple. One is maybe payment provider they're reaching out to. So there's different payment service or payment providers that you can partner with. And it depends on the type that you reach out with, if you can work with them. For example, a PSP, which is a payment service provider, is actually the best, or I should say easiest way for any company to accept payments online if they're in Hong Kong, China, Europe. The reason is this, is because they're able to use their own merchant on record of their payment channels to accept payments on your behalf. What happens is if you're a Hong Kong company and you reach out to maybe a bank or you're trying to work with a bank, you have to be in a certain country or a certain location. So it could be the reason why it's really hard is because you're reaching out to the wrong payment service. So you really have to do your research when you're looking for that payment service.
Okay, that's pretty insightful. I think maybe another reason is it is a pretty small market, maybe to some companies.
Yeah.
And they don't pay as much attention. But, I think, again, about this podcast, there's a lot of companies that use Hong Kong businesses but aren't located there. So I think they're missing out on the real size. And that's maybe why those people you talk to too are asking about Hong Kong, because it just seems like people aren't paying attention to it. And hopefully we can help solve that even today. So the application process, I guess then I feel like by default being international is higher risk. And is that a flag, or what are other flags for being like high risk, or how does the application process work?
Yeah, no, those are good questions. So we're an open platform. So paywall is very open. We just have users complete, like I think their name, email, company name, and then they can set up a paywall account. That way they'll be able to really see the services, test them, see if it's a good fit. And then by high risk. So of course, in the finance world, accepting payments online, there are KYC requirements. KYC is know your customer. So it's not your typical bank where you'll walk into a branch, which you did, I don't know, 20, even 10 years ago, you always had to walk into a branch for your bank account. Now you can get online payment processing without even meeting the person. We work with over 40,000 merchants, and I definitely have not met 40,000 of our merchants. So it's a matter of really knowing your customer. So there are some requirements we have to know, such as usually government IDs involved, tax forms, and we're able to do checks to make sure that we do know our customer, that we're not involved in AML is another abbreviation. I don't actually like using abbreviations, but I think it's what people always use. So it's good that you know them. AML is anti-money laundering.
Okay.
So that's a big thing in the online world, is to make sure that when merchants are doing these payment processing, that they're not laundering money. If you look at examples in the past, there's such things as Liberty Reserve, which was pretty much money laundering. So these are the kind of the checks we do, is usually requirements for certain documentation. And then let's say flags. What will flag us? Well, to be honest, it's a good looking site goes a long way, actually. That's actually what I tell people who join us. Like, if it's a professional looking site and the people that you're dealing with are professional, that's a good sign. I know that's not the only thing we do for our compliance checks, but that's the very the visual thing. And then also we really have to understand their business model. So if you have to ask a lot of questions about how they make money, how they're processing these payments, that's not another good sign. So if you have a complicated business model that just seems a little off, let's say the user flow is you want to subscribe them for $1 for one day, and then the next day it's $100. That's kind of a flag, especially if you're trying to take away maybe certain things, saying like, oh, can we move this asterisk saying it's a recurring bill that happens every month or something. So we go through a lot of checks, actually. We have about probably between 10 to 30 new merchants going live every day, and we have to manually check these merchants. So it's a big step for us, but it's very necessary. When you're dealing with merchants, especially all over, By regions, though, we don't usually flag merchants. The only regions we can't work on are on the embargo list. So that's like North Korea, Cuba, those type of countries. But any other country we're quite open to and really work closely with to make sure that they can get payment processing, because that's what we really want to help people do, is to get that online payment processing.
Cool. No, it sounds really great. And I have some interesting, a lot of interesting points to talk about. And so strategies for companies preparing to apply. Again, I think from Asia, so I say that are in Asia. I think a lot of people still reach out to me and say they're asking me about, I'm not going to name names, but you know, some of these providers, and they're like, how, they're really curious about the process. It seems so mysterious. Like, what documents do I need and things like that. So I use the word strategy, but at what point maybe sometimes they're newer internet e-commerce kind of businesses, when they should start to apply. I think by default, people get a PayPal account. It's kind of like I think everywhere in the world, but at least in Asia, is like PayPal first because it's kind of straightforward. But then they look at a merchant account later. Some of the people we've interviewed too are like later. So is that something you'd also think, or is it something they can do right off the bat, is apply with a merchant account?
Another good question. I can tell you PayMall's experience then kind of broaden it for you. So PayMall, when we started, we were only a PSP, like I said earlier, where we were the merchant on record, meaning that if a merchant signed up for PaymentWall, they didn't have to have their own merchant account. What does this mean? Oh, well, it makes it easier for you to sign up. It makes it where you can just sign up and then you can start accepting credit cards that day. On the other hand, when you get big enough, let's say you're processing, I don't know, $1 million a month, that's something when you really want to start looking at getting your own merchant account, probably even before then, where you have to work directly with a bank it's called an acquiring bank. And what they'll do is they'll underwrite you, and they'll be able to give you credit card processing. Now this, the disadvantage of this is it does take longer usually. Banks are slow. It usually takes four to 6 weeks, but there are some advantages, especially that you're working very closely with the bank and it's your own credit card processing. So you have more control. The other side of it though, is there's more risk. So since you're the merchant on record, you're gonna have to be responsible for handling the risk management. So making sure there's no chargebacks, to make sure that there's no fraud. I know we work with, so we actually only focus on digital goods, which I should have said earlier. So that's meanings like games, e-learning sites, SaaS companies. But in the physical world, there are still experiences with chargebacks. And I know in Asia, especially, what we see is there are high amounts of fraud. So there's such things as called as friendly fraud, which I don't always get why it's called friendly fraud, because it's not very friendly for the merchant. What happens is, let's say a user will buy something, make the transaction, and then they say, oh, I actually don't want to pay for it. So they'll call their bank to do a chargeback.
Yeah, horrible.
so yeah, but it's actually like, it's an actual purchase. It was successful. You can't stop friendly fraud. There are ways to dispute it, but you can't stop it. And then there's other ones where it's like a stolen credit card, where that is fraud. So you have to have maybe use a third party to protect you from this, because it's really important not to get a chargeback limit. You want to be under 1%. So for every 100 transactions, you want to have under one chargeback. I think the average for maybe digital goods, I think, is around 0.8%, just to give you an idea. And so it's important to realize this. And then the thing I'm going into detail on this is because when you have your own merchant account, you can get shut off, and then it's going to be really hard for you to get credit card processing again after that. So you really have to be careful with that and make sure you take care of your chargebacks. Don't let them get out of control, or else it's going to be really hard for you to get credit card processing, because the first time you get it, they always ask for payment history. Well, if you're a new business, how do you have payment history? You don't. So you don't know how much volume you're going to have. So it's not a bad idea to start with the PSP, get some credit history, and then maybe go get an acquirer after that. So that's a route I would seriously look at doing.
Oh, it's clear. I think some questions that are popping in my mind that I didn't have it on my list, but I think sometimes people think, what's the name on the credit card statement? Is that a difference? Because sometimes it'll say, maybe, would it say PaymentWall? Would it, or say the company name on their credit card statement?
Yeah, that's called the descriptor. So what you can do, it really depends on the payment provider you're working with. But if you are the merchant on record, like you work with that acquiring bank, you'll have your company name on that, like Michael Inc. You can put it on there if you work directly with the bank. If you're working with a PSP, maybe somebody like us, we have different banks that we work with. Sometimes it'll say payment wall, or you can send us a descriptor and it could say like payment wall dash Michael Inc. So it really depends. So that's a good question to have, because usually I think probably a lot of good amount of online shoppers will check their credit card statements and check their names. So what we do is when we put our name, we also put our phone number for contact information in case they do have a question, because they're like, oh, I bought something on Michael Inc., but it says payment wall.
Exactly.
So, and we also, another thing that's good to do is we send receipts clearly stating that on their credit card statement, it will say payment wall.
Got it. I have to admit, though, sometimes I get confused at another one. I'll just bring up their name. I don't know if it's a good or not, but To Checkout is another popular one that I've known a lot of people talk about. And that seems like maybe a PSP then, because it says it's not a merchant bank. And it says on the credit card statement, their name on their credit card. And I've been on both a user and a customer on it. So sometimes I get confused. I see To Checkout on my credit card statement. I can't remember which transaction that was for. So is that PSP then?
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Okay. Got it. So I think that's pretty clear. And so then there's descriptors. So then you could give a descriptor then on your application with you, and then it would say like payment wall dash Michael Inc. Is that like always, or is that special request, or
it's not a special request. It's always a number of banks can do it. So what happens when you're working with us at PSP is we work with a bunch of different banks to process credit card transactions. So usually there's a couple ways you can do it. It's we can send it to different banks, and we route the user to a certain bank that's a local bank. The reason we do that is because you want to process the payment in local currency. For example, if we partner with a US bank, they can usually process in US dollars. So then that means if a merchant in Asia is trying to pay, they might see the price point in local currency, but then they're going to be processed in US dollars. So it might not match up exactly on their statement with how much they thought they were going to pay and how much they got charged. So what we do is we work with like a bank in Asia that'll make sure it processes it locally in local currency. Another good thing about processing it with a local bank is there's a less likely chance it'll be flagged. Usually US banks aren't going to recognize cards in Asia as well as a bank in Asia will. So it's good to know that. And then let's say maybe the bank in Asia allows for you to add a descriptor while the bank in the US doesn't. So it's really up to the bank sometimes that we work with.
Okay. Another little bit tangent, but I laugh at it now, but it was a really scary nightmare for me maybe mid 2000s. I was selling online. I'm doing all kinds of different businesses, and I had actually my younger fraternity brother was in college and shipping for me. And we were partners, and he shipped an order to Dominican Republic for $5,000 of goods from our warehouse in the U.S. And right away, like within an hour, because he was so excited to get a $5,000 order, so it was already like gone. It was like signed in the mail, like goods gone. I was at my job. That was a part time business, and I was freaking out. It had like billing address Miami, Florida, shipping address Dominican Republic, and I freaked out, man. Like, and it was a legitimate order though. It was a legitimate order, but the bank, my bank, my merchant account couldn't communicate with the bank in Dominican Republic. It was a Dominican Republic bank, and so I had to call. I personally called the bank and had. I didn't speak Spanish, but I passed the phone in my job. My day job to a guy that spoke Spanish to speak to the bank and coordinate with the bank to make a settlement. And I was totally confused how that actually worked, but then it actually worked where I had to the customer was really like, luckily, like being cooperative and sent a copy of his statement, like showing that he saw it on his online banking or whatever. It was really, really complicated thing. But so I don't know if it's a totally crazy tangent to go on, but I laugh at myself now, but I was really lucky. But I my heart stopped because $5,000 is still a big deal for me. And I was like, it worked out. But then in this case, you maybe that's where a local bank would help, because I guess I was going only to the U.S. bank for my merchant account. And then they were buying from a Dominican Republic credit card bank. So the settlement, the settlement had to like cross from that country into the U.S. to go to my bank. And it seriously, I think, took like 2 weeks or something to get deposited to me or something like that. I can't remember. But
no, I think definitely like local banks will help you with that. Like it'll just help processing time, conversion rates. Conversion rate means when a user pays that the payment actually goes through. It does help a lot. And then also just, with fraud too. So that's, I definitely know, like when you're looking at the transactions going through your business, depending on how many you have, you can definitely, you'll see some flags. You're like, how is this payment going through? This doesn't look right.
And then another mistake was automation. So, we connected our shopping cart directly to our fulfillment warehouse later on in our business. And then we directly shipped like $500 of t-shirts to Africa. That was a loss. And anyway, that one I didn't get back. So,
That's why you could, like, automate your fraud too. Because I mean, it's sometimes, I mean, to be honest, there are some, there's payment services you can use that won't have the fraud protection and will let all payments go through. For PayPal, for example, I remember I worked with one merchant closely and he was expanding in Russia and in Asia. And he said, he could just like see a user make a transaction. And he's like, I know this is going to be fraud, but PayPal's not stopping it. He's like, I visually can see it and I don't get why PayPal can't stop it.
Interesting.
So then I worked with him and kind of, I had him work with the head of our fraud team to make sure that we put up the parameters in place to like block those payments. Cause you want to be able to sleep easy at night.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. That's a good point with looking at the international transactions and different addresses and stuff is a good way to check it.
Yeah. So I'm trying to make sure this is a structured question. So I have so many different ones, but alternative payment options besides just credit card, like Alipay, TenPay are in China, which are big. And we had talked earlier about it, so you brought these up. So I just kind of wanted to bring that up, and you guys can support those.
Yeah. So Alipay and TenPay are obviously two big Chinese options. And then there's also UnionPay too, which is another one.
It's Discover card too, right? UnionPay and Discover, I've heard, are like cooperating.
Yeah. I'm not sure. But I know UnionPay is a little bit off the credit card market. So Discover was kind of interesting because they used to actually, so like Visa, MasterCard do not work directly with merchants. So they work with acquiring banks. But then American Express is actually different. You have to go direct to American Express to get American Express credit card processing. You don't go through an acquiring bank. And then the other one, Discover, used to have the American Express model, where you would have to go direct to Discover and work with them to do credit card processing. But now they work with acquirers also. So it's like, John, what does that really mean? Well, it just means if you want to go direct as possible with American Express or to get their processing, you have to work directly with American Express. That's why you'll see some businesses don't accept American Express, is because of that and because they have higher transaction fees. And then with these alternative payments such as TenPay, Alipay, UnionPay is not really alternative payment, but it's a local payment option in China. And these local payment options in China obviously have a lot of users because China is quite large. So when you look at that, you do want these local payment options. You want what a user is comfortable paying with, because it's a pain point for an end user if they have to use a method they've never heard of. Payments is a lot about trust. The end user has to trust making the payment on your system, accepting that, this payment, one, will go through, 2, that if I sign up for an e-wallet like Alipay, that it is trustworthy, secure, and my account will not be stolen. So it's important to have these local payment options that are familiar with people so then they can pay on your site.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think the rule of business is make it as easy as possible to get money from customer. Right. Like, I don't know why some people say I don't want to accept this payment. It's like you don't want money from a customer. Like, I always agree with or that saying, like, I'll take any money I can get, you know, like from any way I can get it. So we're talking about fee structures now and like all these acronyms, and it's really kind of sometimes can be complicated with all these different words. Maybe you already mentioned a few, or maybe we can also put it in the show notes, but maybe some other popular terms that we should be aware of.
So I mentioned PSP, which is a payment service provider. That's something like that Paywall does. There's AML, which is AML and KYC are the two kind of compliance terms you should know. So anti-money laundering and know your customer. And then for other ones, those are the ones you really want to know. Merchant acquire is a merchant acquiring bank is something you should, or acquiring bank is actually the correct term. And those are banks that will give you a merchant account for credit card processing, which I think is a good one. Some other terms like chargeback rate I went over. So it's good to kind of know the average for that. Definitely under 1%. You want to be for that to make sure your credit card processing is in good standing. I'm trying to think. I mean, like I said earlier, I don't like using abbreviations.
Sure, sure.
And I think those are the main ones I would stick with. I can't really think of any other ones off the top of my head.
Sure, sure.
I don't know if you've come across ones that you're like, oh, that's kind of...
Well, I just feel there's... In the fee structures, like there's the monthly fee, like for, like you said, American Express, I think charges like $10.95 a month US. And then there's like sometimes the merchant banks, $35 statement fees. And then there's like per transaction, 35 cents or 25 cents and a percentage. And it's, and then there's like per, like even on a refund, you got to pay a transaction rate to run a refund. And then there's like authorized.net and a merchant bank and settlements. And I mean, yeah, I mean, I don't expect maybe all this on this question, but this just drives me insane, actually, you know, that there's so many different, everybody's got their handout, it seems, to get a little fee, and it makes it just complicated.
That's actually a good point. Let's bring up like fees a little bit. So there can sometimes be setup fees. For example, I can tell you MasterCard, they charge $500 for a dating site to get their own merchant account. So that's what I'm familiar with. But then, like, you can talk about processing fees. So let's say a typical credit card fee will be maybe like 1-2% plus 30 cents or something. So the 30 cents is considered a transaction fee. This is a fee that occurs... it's a flat fee. And then people sometimes ask me about microtransactions, which is like usually a lower amount, could be like a dollar transactions. And you think of a 30 cent transaction fee is taken from a, that's really high right there. So there are ways around it. So that's why you have to work with your payment provider and seeing what you can do. So that's like the flat fee is considered a transaction fee. Then the other is a percentage fee. So it's like 1-2% plus 30 cents. But then there's also, if you're going direct, sometimes they'll do interchange plus. What does that mean? So there's interchange, which is usually an amount. So credit card processing is actually quite complicated. So interchange plus, it will be like kind of a flat fee plus some. What happens with credit card processing is actually different credit cards will be different amounts, different fee amounts. So for example, let's say you have a credit card that gives you miles. Or any reward credit card. Those usually cost more to actually on the merchant. The merchant's actually paying for a higher fee when you use that type of credit card. So then let's say you do interchange plus, you're gonna get a flat fee, no matter the card. If you don't do that, sometimes you'll get this long fee structure saying, oh, if this card provides miles, the fee structure is this. If this card does cash back, it does this. And it goes on and on. The list is pages. So it's really up to you and what you want to do. So the advantage of doing it with the interchange is it's easier, it's simpler, you're going to know where you're going to charge. If you do it the other way, these cards, But the problem is you can't control what the user is paying with these cards. You don't know if he's going to use his airline miles card. So what happens is it's kind of a guessing game. You're like, oh, I hope he uses a debit card, because a debit card transaction fee is a lot less than a credit card. So it's really up to you on what you want to provide for tips on what you would do or what I would recommend. I'm actually not sure. I'm still not sure. We play this game a lot. And when we set up our credit card processing, is what we want to do. We like to keep it simple for our merchant. So sometimes we'll do interchange with a certain bank, and then other times we'll do maybe the other way, where it depends on the exact credit card. We usually do it depends on the exact credit card, because we have all this data and we know usually what cards are being used, what percentage. So then we're able to analyze it. But for maybe a smaller merchant, maybe that doesn't make sense as much.
Okay.
So it really depends. So
cool.
I hope I didn't confuse and scare everyone.
I guess I didn't know that everybody likes airline miles. Actually, a lot of listeners always try to do like travel hacks, they call it, where they gamify or, you know, try to find the best credit cards with the miles and stuff. So actually, merchants are paying for those airline points. Interesting.
And then there's also like added features that can do on your credit card processing. You can do, like you kind of mentioned, when you did the one transaction, or your friend did the $5,000 transaction, Miami address, like Dominican Bank, it's like, what's going on? So there's also like AVS. That's another abbreviation I remembered. Address verification system.
Yeah.
So that's another thing that it's actually an add-on for credit card processing. So that adds like maybe a couple cents to each transaction. And then there's also 3D Secure. What is that? That's usually used for banks to verify that it is the end user's bank account. So that could include answering a security question, maybe SMS verification, or even logging on to their online bank account just to show that they have that it is their card.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, it's good. I mean, I think a lot of anybody accepting credit cards online should study these. And I think it's such like mystery still, even in today's age. I think a lot of these, and the websites usually are so unclear, or that you get these terms and conditions sheets with such fine print, you can't really know exactly what all these things are. So this is great. Kind of going back to before, but the application process. So then I think you're a PSP, and then you said it could be quicker. Or what's a normal kind of like application time?
So we including integration setup and everything, we've had merchants who sign up on our platform and can be live the same day. We can also, since we're a PSP, but we can also do acquiring. We actually work acquiring banks to underwrite merchants. So that process takes maybe, I think we can still process it right away, but usually in the end, it'll take about probably 3 days by the time you turn in all your compliance documents. So I mentioned like kind of government ID, articles of incorporation, and tax form. We have to verify all this information before we can underwrite you as a merchant for credit card processing.
Okay. And is there fee upfront fees for applying or?
No. So the only upfront fee that I know we actually don't even charge it is the MasterCard for dating sites.
Okay.
But other than that, we try to keep it simple for everyone. It's already complicated enough.
Yeah.
For me to try and sell it.
Yeah. I understand.
So I don't want to throw hidden fees.
Sure.
Hidden fees, anyone?
Sure. So you also mentioned earlier in the show about you're focusing on digital goods and e-learning. Is that like?
Yes.
So is that a focus, like, so others are not really should not consider applying, or maybe give us some examples?
We do focus on digital goods and services. So like SaaS companies that have subscriptions, we work with gaming companies that have micro one-time transactions, virtual currency, digital goods. As another thing could be like MP3s. We also do services and travel, because it's not a physical good you're buying and having to ship.
Yeah.
Those are what we focus on. The reason is because we feel the industry is big enough for that, and that physical goods is a little bit more, as a payment provider, it's just not our focus. We just choose not to go into it. Actually, there's no real reason. We're just really focused and want to be the number one option for digital goods and services.
Okay. Okay, got it. That's great. So then I guess listeners that do e-commerce or physical goods shouldn't consider you as a solution?
We do have some solutions we could provide. Like I mentioned, chargebacks. We do have what's called a spider pipe, like you mentioned, authorized.net earlier. So it's pretty much like that. It's a gateway. So you plug in your own merchant account into our UI, and then we'll help handle customer support, risk management. We'll handle any chargeback disputes on your behalf. So that's the one way we do work with. Our merchant accounts aren't set up, though, to do physical goods. And the reason is, another reason I can think of, too, is we provide a lot of alternative payments. And with alternative payments, the fee structure is differently. I was mentioning credit cards is a low percent, maybe 2% plus 30 cents. But you get into alternative payment options, and the fees can get a lot higher. They can be up to 20%. Even with SMS billing, it can get up to 70% in Brazil, South America.
Whoa.
So, yeah. So if you're selling physical goods, I'm not sure how much money you can make if you're selling a good and the transaction cost is 70% of the price.
Yeah. It had to be some kind of like medicine or something. Got it.
But yeah, physical goods, if you reach out to us, I always try and point merchants in the right direction, because we don't really do physical goods. We don't do adult processing, and we don't do gambling are the three main things, but still we get merchant inquiries. So we do have maybe partners, actually friends. I like to refer business to friends more than partners sometimes.
Yeah.
But just because I think that I know they're going to treat this person right. They're going to act in good faith. So if you do reach out to us, we always try and set you up with the best person to talk to.
Cool. No, that's great. That's great. And actually, another point that I didn't have on my list, but I'm thinking is on the flow, the transaction flow. So when the customer goes to checkout, do they redirect to your website, or is it stay on the merchant's website for the complete transaction? You know how, like, I think you said you worked at PayPal, so you know most PayPal, unless you use the Pro, which isn't supported in Hong Kong, I believe. I'm actually kind of verify that, but you know, like, a lot of times the merchant prefers it just to keep the user experience on their own site. So how does your user experience or flow work usually?
Yeah, we try to keep it all on the merchant site. So what we do is actually PayMall can be integrated in iframe onto your site. So what happens is it becomes a part of your site. It looks like it's on your site. We customize it to make sure it really looks good looking. I mean, merchants spend a lot of time designing these sites, so we want to make sure it still looks good. So what we do is the iframe will be put in. It'll have all the different payment options, and then it'll check out in that iframe.
Awesome.
So we try and do that. Some payment options, like you mentioned, PayPal will take you to another page. So it depends on the payment option. But I would say the majority of the options we work with can all be checked out in that iframe.
Okay. Awesome. And yeah, like, kind of getting towards the end, I hear, you know, international payment processing, seems like you guys are expanding globally, and it seems like you're definitely paying attention. Kind of just curious, maybe why or what is, you know, sometimes a lot of times people just stay within the U.S. It's a big enough market. I'm maybe just curious, or if you're willing to share, or if you know what your strategy is
for
like globally, or it seems like you're focusing on your international markets. Seems to be, you said you're starting in Beijing now, and you mentioned some other markets, so it seems really great for people like me and the listeners. I'm just curious maybe why or you know.
So I think it's actually, so yeah, why are we so international? So I think it's actually interesting to be so international in San Francisco, especially at a startup, because most companies are so US focused. They get their VC funding, they just get as many users as they can in the US, and then they hope to get acquired or something like that. Our thought process was a little bit different, and I can pin that to our CEO, Honor Gunde. He grew up very internationally, speaks a lot of different languages, and then has a lot of experience traveling. He's actually, I think he's in China right now. So he went to China Joy, and now he's helping set up the office or working with our team and making sure the office is all set up there. But it's the vision of that. So it's recognizing that there is a need, that there are merchants outside the US looking for these kind of solutions. And that really makes us focus all over the world. We don't want anyone in any country to not be able to accept payments. I mean, the world is such a big place, obviously, and like, how can you ignore or not really look at expanding in China?
Sure.
So I think it's what it really is. And it's really exciting for me as somebody, I'm sure you probably know too, Mike. I don't know. I think it's exciting that being part of something so international. I think US, sometimes the companies are so US focused. And then even Americans themselves don't travel. I mean, I look at you, like you're in Asia right now. You told me you're like, I'm traveling to Beijing, I think, tomorrow.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of, it's cool how much you're traveling and then to experience all these different things. So it's, I don't know how one company can just focus in one market when there is so much opportunity out there.
No, I definitely agree. I think a lot of my American friends just America. Actually, it's almost similar in China. Chinese people just think about China. Of course, there's the export factories or e-commerce, but the majority of the population is only like concerned, and even the investors and the startups a lot of times just focus inside China. But I guess because the markets are big enough to make a decent amount of money, and then later you can expand. So, but yeah, I think definitely excited you guys are doing this international stuff. I'm really excited about it, and kind of just a. Well, actually, another question I just thought of is sometimes with merchant accounts, if you're higher risk, like I feel there's like a 30 or 60 day, I forget the word, holding, where they don't release the money or they don't release 100% of the money, that transaction. So if I you know, how long settlement maybe, or maybe, you know, so, these terms.
Yeah. So the reason it's sometimes called a reserve, and some merchants will have it. What happens is, it's a good point. So it's a chargeback risk. So what they do is a chargeback can occur via credit card processing up to 6 months after the day of the transaction. So if I made a transaction today as an end user, I can make a chargeback next year. And what that means is the credit card company or the payment provider is at risk for that 6 months of that transaction. So for example, if let's say we pay you out weekly, but a user does a chargeback from 6 months ago, you already received that money. So it's a risk for the person paying you out. So it's called a reserve usually. And it ranges from like 0 to maybe 5%.
Okay.
But it can also even go, I think for high risk merchants, it could probably even go higher.
I know some higher.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's another thing to be aware about. So yeah, but it's usually settled out. And then also you can negotiate and say, oh, I only want the reserve to be capped this high or something. So that's something you can negotiate with your payment provider.
Okay. No, this is great. This is great. And I think that kind of wraps it up. If you have, I always like to say any tips for businesses, usually I say in Asia that I want to get started, you know, accepting credit cards or accepting payments online?
Tips to start online. I think I always think that you should have your questions ready, know what you want, and then work with the company. And then know, like, for example, if you're working and even asking for payment processing, I would ask a lot of questions and be very upfront to them about what you want to do, so then they can help and work with you and figure out a good solution. I think it just makes it easier for everyone. So, that's what I would do. I always like to come up with creative solutions for merchants I'm working with. And then if the person doesn't want to work with you on coming up with these solutions, then I would probably start looking for somebody else. So you want somebody who you're going to like, especially when you're setting up your account, you want them to be responsive. Because imagine after you set up your account, and they were unresponsive before. Now that they have you, they're probably not going to respond to your emails. So just be aware of that.
Clear. Great. Thanks so much. And of course, I'm sure people are interested to apply. I'm actually going to apply, I think, after this. And And maybe, well, how could people get started? Of course, paymentwall.com, and what other, maybe also people want to reach out to you or your email, your customer service, or what direct email or Twitter or whatever you want to share here.
I mean, you can follow me on Twitter, JOWINT13. Email is my best way, JON@paymentwall.com. So it's, and then we also have some general emails that you can use, bizdev@paymentwall.com, bizdev@paymentwall. I think, yeah, either way you reach out to me, no matter what, there's so many different channels of communication now. I mean, I even have like a WeChat name now.
Oh, cool. So, yeah, we should. So, you can add me on there. So,
yeah. So, yeah, it's kind of funny. So we're very global, so we need all these forms of communication. Sometimes I look at my phone and I have so many alerts from so many different, like, Skype, Twitter, yeah, Facebook.
I dump it all into Evernote. That's how I treat everything like email. So even a chat, sometimes I just take a screenshot on my phone and dump it into Evernote. And then that's how I kind of manage all these channels so I don't lose something. But
I'm pretty responsive to all of them, I think. Maybe the merchants I work with can tell you more, but I feel I'm responsive, and we usually respond same day I get emails.
Yeah, I mean, we set up this show. You've been really awesome to coordinate, and it's really great. So thanks so much, John.
Yeah, no, thank you. Really appreciate it. And yeah, of course, let me know if you ever have questions, or once we open our office in Beijing, too, you'll have to come by and check it out.
Yeah, I want to go. I'll go.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, me too. I haven't been to China yet.
Okay.
I'll let you know.
We'll meet. And thanks. And then that's a wrap for this show. Thanks so much.
Thank you, John, for being so amazing, coming on the show and just sharing really openly. I learned tons about this kind of complex, confusing industry of merchant accounts and, you know, online receiving money, e-commerce. And, you know, it's, again, like I keep saying, Asia and Hong Kong businesses really need more services. And I'm glad you guys are paying attention to us. I did want to mention some questions that I got from some of the Hong Kong business friends from Startups HK Group on Facebook when I talked to them. And John answered them too. So let me just pick one of them that I think is most important to bring up. It's PaymentWall. Does it really support Hong Kong, at least not the one that would expect a normal credit card processor? Their website says they pay out by wire once or twice a month. You'd also be paying your bank's income wiring fee, so it would be hard if you got to pay bank fees on both sides. So John replied, we do support Hong Kong businesses as a PSP model. This model is different than working with an acquiring bank. It also is a lot faster for you to set up. As for payouts, it's standard. Is standard for wired fees to exist. We work on doing payouts with as little fees as possible by expanding our business. But since we're a U.S. company, we do pay out from our U.S. banks, so wire fees may incur. So just keep that in mind, guys, that you know, we would have to pay a bank fee. So I think they receive the money in their U.S. account, and then they wire it once or twice a month to the bank account of our company in Hong Kong or anywhere in the world. Also, I'm going to add a downloadable PDF. I'm trying to do that every show. So if you want to get some more insights of terms and comparisons of merchant accounts, I have a list I've been keeping, and I'm going to make it all nice and neat and for you guys to look at. So that's all I have for this show. Again, that's on episode 51. So globalfromasia.com/episode51. Next week, we're going to have Shlomo from appinchina.co talking about mobile app market in China and how to get your app, if you have one, into the Chinese market. I got to interview him when I was up in Beijing, so I'm excited to release that and share. So catch you guys next week. Peace.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.